R6.
Also, we were looking at a lane that had been put on the books in the early 2000s that extended that lane. I talked to Karen, our builder director, about the lane, and she said the lane doesn't have a lot of teeth. And so she'll come and talk about the lane and the problems the lane has now. We better
talk. You talking about the lane is somebody on fire?
Yeah, it's the lane on the.
It's just like a judgment.
If there's serious doing, it's the lane.
It's a judgment. We get a judgment on it.
Right.
Attached to the real estate.
No, not the real estate. We attached to the lawsuit.
To the lawsuit. What lawsuit?
The lawsuit. If they're involved in a lawsuit to get their money, we attach to the lawsuit.
Just probably for example would be, I could be wrong, but a car crash, one person sees the other person causing the crash to recover, and we have an ambulance bill that's out there that the other fellow that's suing says, well, I can't pay this ambulance bill. They're on Randy. If they get a recovery from
deployment is TCFP, which is Texas Commission Fire Protection. It's
one of the governing bodies for the fire departments in the state. EMS generally deploys through SETRAC. Fire departments deploy through TIFMIS. Governor Abbott said he would like all nursing homes in the state of Texas have their residents and staff tested, all licensed nursing homes. We had 12 of them in Montgomery County. Four of them we already completed testing on. One of them closed, and other facilities said they would handle their own testing. So at least six. We reached out to the fire departments because they were given the directive that they had the ability and authority to go and test the staff and the residents. And we had a good collaborative meeting. It happens every Tuesday after this call. And the fire departments who were interested sent us an email. And the model that we've developed for Montgomery County is our deployment team model. We're going to add some of the firemen to our deployment team. So, for example, if it's a nursing home in the Woodlands, Woodlands firemen are going to join our team and participate in the command staff component of the deployment. And that will go through the TIFMIS side of state deployment. So we've had some of the fire departments who have been eager and active to engage in that, and we're happy to partner with them and complete those six facilities in the county. And the first one actually will take place tomorrow morning. And we do have all six scheduled and ready to go, which happened so quick. Public health did a great job calling the nursing homes, reaching out, getting them scheduled, and now we can go in and get them placed.
And I'll break in here and brag just a little bit on James and our entire crew. I think public health under the direction of Melissa and EMS under the direction of James and our two docs have done an outstanding job setting up these testing sites. They're about three times faster than the state testers are getting these tests done. They've been very efficient. They've been very well received. And so they're going to be quietly leading from the rear on this project because the fire departments really haven't been doing any testing. So they'll be doing setting up the scheduling and the coordination of how nursing home patients can get in and out of the facility if they're ill. And James and his crew will be working with specifically trained fire department personnel to assist with testing. So I think it'll go very well, and I appreciate the job James is doing coordinating the both fire departments.
On the other one, just the general EMS response side of the house, we're back to focusing on the basics. The longer we do this, the longer where we have some lapses in PPE, or we said if you put a non-rebreather on a patient, we wanted you to do these specific steps. Just over time, the longer we do this, people have kind of fallen out of some of that practice. So we focused this week on reminding everybody what we're all here for, the basics of protection, from COVID response, we'll be able to manage that going forward. Just a reminder, and also EMS Week, so we've had good collaboration with the hospitals and crews seem to be in good spirits. It's a unique time for EMS Week, considering everything that's going on in the country. Although we plan to have food and festivities and everything here, we can't at the moment, but it's not going to stop us from saying thank you.
So, an analogy, if you play football and you block and you tackle and you run 3 yards every play in a cloud of dust, you do that the whole game, it gets boring. And people get sloppy. They don't block and tackle as well. If you don't have a 50-yard bomb every once in a while, there's no excitement. Well, we've had our 50-yard bombs over and over and over for the last 2 months. And some of the chiefs, district chiefs have told me that, their teams are starting to feel like, hey, this is kind of the same old, same old. And it's just in every profession, but I know in healthcare providers, the longer they do the same old, same old, same old, the easier it is to get a little bit remiss in following all the proper guidelines. And so we're at a bit of a fear point now. We've gone a long time with no infections from our staff, and now we've got people who may not be paying as close attention as they should. So that's going to be a really tough job, is to keep them engaged. Protection.
Yeah, this is the football game that never ends.
Never ends.
Right? So we're in this one's a double
order.
Yeah, we can do baseball now. The chief likes baseball too. So we can do how many overtime? It's not overtime. It's
training.
17th inning here. But that's a real concern. And we talked about that as a team this morning. We talked about it all the time. How do we best address that? And it's usually through our leadership, through our chain of command. I feel secure that the crews have done everything we've asked them to do. But Randy's exactly right. And the more you do something over and over and over, you can definitely, the human nature's become complacent. And we have been incredibly, I think there's a bit of luck, but a lot of it was a lot of work and detail from the crews, that we have not had a bad infection. We have not had one of our crews injured or sick from this, but it's definitely a possibility. It's just still a bad illness. Most people have not that much problem with it, but there's a few one-offs that for bad go. So we want to do everything we can to protect our crews. There was a question earlier on one of the other board meetings about how to classify a COVID death. I thought I'd go into that a little bit. There is no exact answer to that. When I talked to the medical examiner staff, which we liaise with them, I had talked with them yesterday, we liaise with them all the time, we train with them. The way that they have to classify every case that's referred to them by the local justice of the peace in the county, so that's who ultimately has to say over referring cases to forensics for an examination. The justice of the peace is responsible for essentially signing off on the manner and the cause of death. So the manner, was it accidental, was it suicide, was it a homicide, or was it a natural death? And then the cause of death, what likely killed the patient? So what happens the vast majority of times is that the JP will be called out there if it's expected death. Mom was kind of ill and sick and had heart attacks and strokes and things. They liaise with the family doctor, and someone will sign that death certificate. The doctor says, yeah, I looked at that lady. She probably died of a heart attack, or this is what I think from what the JP is telling me, that most of those cases are not investigated specifically for a COVID moniker. Now, the patient may well have had that as a contributing factor, but not all those cases are investigated. If the case goes to the forensics, i.e. the justice of the peace, refers that case for forensics, or it's a case like a questionable or a death in a hospital within 24 hours or within a course of our care, all those get referred, then those cases are investigated by forensics. I know they told me, this is about a week ago, they had sent off a number of swabs. They've had one or two positives come back on those patients. And then so the cause of death for those patients, it depends on the circumstances of their death. Some may be just COVID positive and had a big intracerebral stroke. So the cause of death for that, after Dr. Gary did the autopsy, would be a hemorrhagic stroke, and maybe a secondary cause if the patient was COVID positive is probably a one-off from that. If the patient had a lungs full of pus and clearly died of pneumonia and was COVID positive, and the clinical picture fit it, so the medical examiner looks at the doctor's records from the ED and the hospital system. They have access to our run records and what our clinical impressions were, and then they put it together and come up with the most likely cause of death. So if that was a pneumonia picture that's COVID positive with lungs full of pus, that would be labeled a COVID death. Hope that clarifies. I know this is not an exact science. I think it's a pretty common misconception. This is, the death certificate and how we classify deaths really all over the country is not terribly scientific at times.
One thing we've learned about this disease, nothing about it has been exact, including the testing.
Right, because there's lots of people that may have died of a stroke that are COVID positive.
Well, the direction from the CDC at one time, we dislike that they say they died of COVID. What is that?
Yeah,
it's only work.
But obviously, we're not doing that in this county because
we work with them. I think they do a really, really good job at trying to get to the bottom of it. If it's referred to their staff at forensics, if it gets to them, they do an incredibly thorough job of following up and really trying to dig down and figure out what the exact or the most likely manner and cause of death is. I feel pretty confident. I think they have a pretty good crew over there.
Yeah. Chief, I interrupted you. Anything else on deployment?
No, as the county went to phase two, then that puts us in kind of our phase two of the recovery timeline. So we'll sit back a little bit, watch what the county does over the next 7 to 10 days. My planning section was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. They'll go to Tuesday, Thursday. really the pace of our room here is mostly deployment dependent as of right now. We haven't made any big sweeping changes operationally or clinically in about 2 weeks. So we're just watching what's going on in the county, see what rolls out, how people respond, see how the crews respond. Mr. Johnson can talk more about schedules and things like that.
In general, now that the county is opening up to phase two, we want to sit and watch for at least the next 2 weeks to make sure we don't have any kind of a serious recurrence of COVID cases. If not, when we start going more into operations as usual, then we'll start tearing down this room and we'll move operations that take place in this room really to some of the local offices, and we'll meet on an occasional basis rather than being here. Okay. Melissa, talk to us about vouchers.
Last Wednesday, we opened the voucher program for both MCPHD for symptomatic testing and MCHD for asymptomatic or symptomatic testing. We're going to go through all of the symptomatic MCPHD vouchers before we start issuing symptomatic MCHD vouchers. We now have three organizations online that will test folks: America's ER, Lone Star, and Woodland Functional Family Health. As of 9:30 this morning, we had tested 74 MCPHD test vouchers for symptomatic and 122 with symptoms, and we had over 100 out waiting to be filled out. The call center is taking approximately 200 calls a day. Not all of those are related to trying to get vouchers, but a great deal of them are. So it's going well. We've not received complaints at this date about any of the situations at the testing site. We still have two other clinics that are working to see if they can obtain enough test kits and have the manpower to be able to handle up to 50 tests a day. So we're still waiting to hear on those that will give us a broader spread in the community. Very fortunate right now that we have done some testing in the county with our state testing. Those 3 days at Tamina. Also, we have Kroger out in the community doing tests.
What's their schedule? Kroger's
schedule is ended at Bear Branch, and their next testing location here will be May 31st through June 2nd in New Caney. And there are three Walmarts in town that test on Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays from 9 to 11 a.m. in their parking lot. At least last time I checked, that was the time. I did not check again today. I checked yesterday. So there's lots of testing going on, which is a good thing. The state has now changed the way they want results reported. They've gone where it was just positive, and they were going to be calling and notifying everybody at those state testing sites of the results. They have now changed that, and all test results, positive, negative, or indeterminate, will be coming to the local health department, and the local health department will be responsible for notifying all those people of those test results. So we're waiting for that process to begin. It is supposed to be beginning today, but we have not seen the large influx of the negative or indeterminate test results. None of the Tamina test results have come back to us. I believe they all go to the state and then they funnel them down, so I cannot even tell you until we start seeing them how long the delay on those group testing sites will be.
On that positive note, do you have any other information that you'd like to give us?
How is this an unsung reality?
Yeah.
Okay.
Doctors, Dixon and Patrick, anything?
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate, I'm super proud of the team. I think she's done a great job with these deployments. We lead the state here. We are on a call every week with every other medical director in the state of Texas and many throughout the country, and I think that we are, I will tell you, we are 1,000 yards ahead of any other area in Texas at getting this done, and it's really due to some of the key players here. Jessica McCloskey, Sean Simmons have really stood up and been stars here. Chief has liaised with public health, and I mean, it's all been one big team effort, so I've been really pleased to see it and the performance of it. I think it's really says a lot about our organization that we're able to execute on this level. The governor asked, and we've delivered within 1 week.
which I will tell you, I don't think anybody else is going to deliver at all, but it makes me super proud to be part of this.
Give you a week.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm leaving people off, so.
Well, it's not a disaster or a hurricane or building collapse. This is something none of us, I mean, I don't think anybody really prepared for or saw coming. And so we all had to learn from scratch. So that's probably been the most impressive part. It's not something that says even in our wheelhouse, but somebody had to do it. I think we've done it. I would agree, very impressive. And listening to the other medical directors talk across the state, we're definitely ahead.
Well, I think one of the things that y'all done has been so impressive was having your Zoom meeting every night, and now three times a week, keeping everybody updated on the change of the week, which has happened more than weekly. And that's been impressive.
As well as reminding about the routine
thing. Hey, routine.
Well, does anybody have any other information they'd like to talk about? No Zoom questions?
No.
Okay, if there's no more questions, then...
Randy?
Yes.
Hey, this is Brad. I know I spoke with Melissa last week, and I know we've had some discussion on the data that we're publishing, we're putting up. I continue to get questions from constituents, in some cases begging for us to update and release the information that we had been providing. I'm getting this daily on getting that up there and providing that back to the public.
Well, okay. We'll have to figure out a way to increase the number of people that are counting it, because the numbers have gotten so large and there's so many moving parts that it's very difficult to track every single case throughout the system wherever they go.
Misty did have a conversation with a number of residents that were forwarded to her when they had questions, and she walked them through going to the OEM website and hovering over the zip codes where it shows how many people in that zip code have tested positive, and they were very satisfied after meeting with that. We can certainly post zip code, male and female, and the number they are. The additional information will not be accurate, and I would rather not post inaccurate information. We maybe can post every Friday all the zip codes and male or female and age group, but where they are in the system with the numbers that are in the system right now, it can't be kept up with.
Do you think that information would be sufficient?
So this isn't information that we're tracking from an epidemiological standpoint, so we're just looking at positive and negatives now. We're keeping up with where these people go, who they come into contact with while they're positive, what their current status is, or anything like that?
We absolutely do, but you don't get to call 873 of them a day. You have once a week updates on those that take all week to get all the updates. So by the time James is hospitalized, and we receive that information, by the time it's back to calling to check on case number 874 again, he may have gone home already. He may be in a different part of his care. He may no longer be home. He may be hospitalized. The hospitalized are the easier ones to keep up on. The recovered are much more difficult because they're at home. It's dependent on them answering the phone. It's dependent on the charge nurse, the health supervisor answering your questions when you call the hospital family to check on. The clients that are hospitalized, a number of patients are lost to follow-up because they just don't want to talk to us anymore about where they are and what's going on with them. So
how is that impacting the accuracy of our active versus recovered cases?
The recovered cases,
once they're recovered, stay there. The active going into recovered only change over when they're able to contact them and find out that they have met the status for recovery.
So if we can't contact them anymore, they may stay in active status much, much longer than they should be.
Yes. and they're considered lots to follow up, and that is a state-regulated term that you use for those that are no longer able to be contacted.
So, in other words, this is information that we're tracking, but it's become too cumbersome for us to get to.
It would be too unclear for the public.
I think we made a mistake in the beginning by giving too much information out. And now that we can't track that volume of information for that volume of patients that are constantly moving, we're having
to... Too much information is never a mistake.
Yeah. Well, it is when you can't manage it anymore.
Well, and we were warned by the other counties in the beginning that we should not be posting that because this is what's going to happen. Just like you may have seen on the news yesterday when Sebastian Turner reported a COVID death that happened April 26th. They're weeks behind on their deaths, even in Harris County and other counties, because the volume is overwhelming. The inability to talk to folks is overwhelming. I might call Dr. Dixon, and he's like, 3 days without temperature, I'm returning to work, I have a negative test result. I might call James, and he might talk to me for an hour and a half about his cat and all other kinds of things. It's very difficult because they're home alone, recovering in isolation, and they're lonely, and you get one of those on the phone and half your day's gone. On top of that, each person evaluating and doing case contacts with their phone. All the people they've been with in the last 2 weeks on a positive case who may not be home, and they're calling you back, or you're talking to them on the phone. So I know it seems very simple. It is a very, very cumbersome process, and there's not a lot of technology that's able to assist us.
So we're just not doing it then?
No, sir, we are doing it.
We're not reporting it.
We are doing it, but because of the delay and the lag time, we cannot change our sheet 15 times a day to provide it to the public.
There's pears in there, too.
We are providing every day to the public the number of cases per zip code, the number of active, positive, hospitalized, to the best of our ability. But having that line list takes hours a day to maintain. And it takes 2 staff members hours a day to maintain it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though, it's being maintained. We're just not making it public.
Having it maintained on the website is the cumbersome piece of the puzzle. We have the data. We have it. But publicizing it in a way that is understandable to the community is not automated. And getting it on the website takes hours a day.
Well, and I'm just asking this because I get that NC reported, and when you pull that list up, it's from day one.
Well, we said that.
What I was thinking is if you want to take the ones that recovered, move that to a separate test and just post it. Yeah, two lists, but once it's recovered, move that list and just keep the. The active cases will be the first thing you quit. And if they want to go look at the list of people that are coming, not the same, it may be it, God bless them. But to me, you got to scroll all the way down the bottom and count how many you gave them. And to me, I'm a summary guy. You know, okay, there was 50 new cases today, and, you know, 50 people that recovered, and, you know, I get most of that's in there, but if we just every day put on there, for Tuesday the 19th, we saw 19 cases.
You do that every day.
In the words,
okay. That you went from 417
to... It's hard to put on the chart. I'm just trying to make it easy.
But that's not what you're talking about they're wanting to see, right?
If there's a way of separating out, you know, what I'm getting called about is having the list that we were previously providing with all of the data, and if we compare that down and remove the recovered cases off of it and just list the active and new cases, that's one thing. Since we spoke, this has been multiple
messages sent to me over the weekend, multiple phone calls about this, and it's from a public standpoint, they're looking at this of, well, what are y'all trying to not show us? That's what I'm getting.
So weekly, we can try to do. How about if we start doing it weekly? Misty, I talked to her this morning about what we could do, and she said it had died down not only on the Facebook post, but everywhere else. And her professional recommendation would be to leave it alone, because with these, when these 1,850 tests come back over the next 2 days, to get that information even processed to get on there, it's going to be all hands on deck to get that to happen. But we can try doing something weekly.
Maybe I'll send out a note. We'll start posting at the end of the week.
That's
right. The weekly.
We can post them on Saturday. So my
I think you got to find balance here between, and I get the public's point. No, I think we give them as much information as we reasonably can give them. They're welcome to pick up on the call and ask. But on the other hand, if we're taking staff time, and the burden staff working their normal job for that day to the people, because they're afraid there's going to be some conspiracy going on, which, you know, everybody, their brother on TV's talking about, so it's kind of political. I think we have to come up, we have to rise above that.
And the information is there. It's just not listed by case number 57. All the information is accessible via the OEM website and our website combined, the number of active, positive, death, and hospitalizations and recovered. Those are on there. It's just not by individual.
That's a good point. What I was saying is that we have people contact tracing, trying to isolate other people to keep them healthy. So we're trying to look at that as the bigger mission rather than getting too granular on the data. We have the data, and we're tracking the patients out. The team over there is doing the best they can to do it.
People have been reading the IQ 84, the government tracking.
able to put it into Excel spreadsheets that formulate graphs. when we do it line by line, I'm physically doing it line by line. And I'm also, I mean, through this entire process, I've been working from morning until late at night after my kids go to bed, answering media calls, trying to keep up with my regular job, and this list that is on the website that is just straight data entry. And then it's inaccurate every day, which is, you know, frustrating for me personally, because I strive to be as accurate as I can with the information that I supply to the public. And the fact that I, you know, an hour after the list is published, I get a call that, oh, this person died, or oh, this person's recovered, and I'm like, oh, on our list, they're in the hospital. And it's just inaccurate, and it's become unsustainable. And every other county in the region is not doing it this way. And we did make a mistake from the very beginning of providing this much information in that format, in my opinion.
Which they warned us against on the very first phone call when we started doing that.
Yes.
Well, hindsight being 2020, as it always is, one of the issues I see with this is the toothpaste is out of the tube. We started this process. The governor says we can start opening back up. The, you know, left is saying stay closed, the right staying safe, no, we can open. And here we are saying, okay, well, we're phasing down, we're now into phase two, we're going to start scaling back and everything else. But now we have so many cases, we can't keep track of everything, and we can't do this. And it's not that I don't understand, because Missy, I think you've done a hell of a job, and thank you so much for everything you do. It's just, we're sending conflicting messages here. And I haven't gotten as many phone calls as Mr. Spratt, but I have also gotten phone calls and Facebook messages. People, hey, why is it? Because I didn't even realize they were looking at my Facebook with the post when I reached the update, and they're asking for the same information. So how do we go about figuring out, you know, some sort of compromise? Because we've already been releasing this information, now we're not, but we're scaling back, but we have so many cases, it's too complex. I mean, that's a really hard signal, and
I think that's something that we need to find some type of balance on what we're releasing, because I have had a few mention that, well, they'll just start FOIAing that information on a regular basis, which if we start getting those type of requests, that will inundate both the NCHD and public health district personnel.
I would say what the county is getting from the list standpoint that goes to the media is in a whole other arena on what we, public health, and the county are using to make decisions to open the county.
Yeah,
they're not even on the radar. Yeah, so we feel confident in the information that we're getting from public health, because we can see everything. Unblinded, we can see cases coming in, we can work with everybody in the county and make decisions. That's not the same information that goes to the media.
Well, okay, so we understand the problem. Let us work on it over the next few days, and we'll give you guys a follow-up call later in the week, okay? But we are, just for the future, I'm going to talk about this more and more. We were already downsizing our excess financial capacity on purpose for the last 3 or 4 years, and it's been downsized quite adequately. It's downsized by $6 million last year. Just on collections on lower runs that we're running right now, we're running a run rate of $5 million less than we collected last year. That's either the tax rates don't drop. So when you start looking at that, then you look at the potential that 2021 could be a bigger economic abomination than we're having right now. There's a lot to prepare for, and I don't want to get caught standing on the very top of the mountaintop and have to dive into the blue sea. I'd rather take a step down slowly so that we adjust appropriately to manage it. I know that doesn't, where does that go from reporting? I'm just saying, you know, we'll do the very best we can to make sure that we continue to get information out. We'll talk with Misty and try to coordinate that. But we do need to be efficient. Just because, you know, 3 or 4 or 6 people are asking for specific information, they need to do maybe they need to do a records request, and Donna can give them the records that they need that are not difficult. So we'll work on it, but I don't think we're going to find the perfect answer for why we're changing and why we're not, and why we're not supporting perfect data.
I just want to be clear, though. They are doing contact investigations. They are following up on every patient on the list. People are not being dropped out of the process. When we receive test results, they're logged onto a very elaborate Excel spreadsheet. They're sent to the state by noon each day. The information is being gathered. Multiple people are entering it into the spreadsheet. It's now a laser fish form, so that's going to be very helpful and will allow us to grab key components, and after all the backlog is entered into there, we'll have some better information that way. We've been able to divide it in irate and everything now that we've got them into laser fish, so we are automating things that can be automated. The state is no longer requiring us to send in their form that they have put out that caused such complexity to the system. So over the next couple of weeks, as things improve that way, we will have a better way to export data. But going through those files and individual pieces of paper, because the state requires them to be faxed to them, is cumbersome beyond belief.
And we are going to be required now to record tremendously more data back to the state than we were before, because now we're going to have to give the state information regarding positive tests, negative tests, and undetermined tests. We haven't been having to do that before.
As well as notify those clients. They will not be notifying the clients. So we are responsible for notifying the 1,850 tests that were done, which is not a big deal on the positives because we're calling them anyway. But 10% of those are going to be positive if things hold true to court. So that'll be 185 positives. And all those rest will be people having to call and make sure that they have notified every single one of those negative cases verbally, not leaving a message.
And the public health district does all of this on $90,000 a year from the county. So that's a pretty good stretch of the tax dollar.
Can I ask a quick question? Hi, this is Misty. Can I ask a quick question to Mr. Spratt and Mr. Chant? Whenever you speak to these members of the public, have you been able to explain to them that all of that data is still available at the OEM website, at the dashboard?
I have, and gotten multiple feedback about OEM sites differing from ours, which has happened on a few occasions.
Since I began collaborating with them a week ago, I do daily checks on their site, and it's been spot on since I've been collaborating with them on it.
Yeah, and with the first time when I contacted you with them having the issues, a lot of people have been hung up on that. I've just gotten a lot that they're like, well, that doesn't, I'm not seeing what I want to see on the OEM site. It was easier to just look through the list.
Brad, how many people did you get calls from? And, you know, I'm not asking for names, but is it the same people or is it 5 people, 10 people, 20 people?
Had some of the same, and then a few of them, it's different each day. I either get a Facebook message, either through my page. I've gotten a few personal that I've gotten a few that I've gone back and, you know, they just sent it to me who aren't friends of mine, so it got flagged in my spam box, but I've been trying to respond. I've told multiple people that, you know, hey, this is, we've got the data, it's just becoming more cumbersome to manage, but a lot of people just aren't accepting that as an answer.
Yeah, I'm not trying to identify, but it's a big problem, and obviously we need to address it. It's just a small core group of people, and you know, we get to try to address it for them. And, it was my thought, and I'm sure you talk about the same thing, but just trying to gauge how big of an issue it really is. is all I'm doing, is what I would do. And then we need to address it from there.
So in the first couple of days, I received a few messages on Facebook on both the public health side and then my personal site, because my name's everywhere and everybody knows that I run it. Mm-hmm. And after dealing with it with those few people and explaining it, I had a couple of phone conversations with them, walking them through the OEM site, they were satisfied with that. I didn't have any negative responses when I was able to explain all the data that's still out there. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's missing, and not just running through the entire list, is that you have a male in his 50s in 77316, but you still know there's 26 people in 77316, which people are using the data, they tell me, to make decisions on whether they can go to a restaurant or whether they can go to the store. And if you know that there's only 5 people in your zip code, then they feel more comfortable. And if the only people that I'm still, that I've had a couple messages for that weren't okay with me telling them, you know, the data's all there or whatever, and they wanted the list, were people who were trying to make their own charts and graphs. And so for me, you know, if they're just trying to make their own charts and graphs, like, we don't need for them to be doing that.
Okay, just real brief statement, and my poli sci degree is like kicking out here, and you're absolutely right, Misty. I think that if they're going to be doing that, the citizens have the right to do it at their own time. But telling them that they shouldn't be doing that, that's kind of inflammatory language. I wouldn't say they shouldn't be doing that. They need to be doing that on their own time, and they can submit open records requests if they need that detailed of statement.
Well,
that.
No,
helmet.
Yep. I agree with that. Thank you, Mr. Chance.
Okay, so we're going to need to close this meeting. We've got another call coming up in a few minutes. So I'll go ahead and close. Thank you for your comment, and well understood. Maybe we need to have Misty do some coordination with Mr. Spratt, and hopefully she can help resolve some of the issues that some of the public is having. We'll not have a Zoom call next week, as the MCHD regular board meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, May 26th. We're adjourned at this time, and it is 2:50 p.m. Thank you.